Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and now largest segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and yes, even media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that none of them can be fixed. It doesn't matter which bums you vote out of office or position, or which bums you vote in or appoint. Our phone number, if you'd like to discuss any of this at any time over the next 3 hours, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. Reuters has a very jaundiced report out on the violence that is escalating, particularly in Jerusalem, but throughout Israel. The author of this editorial, and it's not really an editorial, it's being presented as news, even though it is in an editorial form, at least it has an editorial flavor, because it comes across more as opinion piece than it does as journalism. It begins, for months, the streets of mainly Arab East Jerusalem. You know, the fact is that Jerusalem is Jerusalem. There is no East, there is no West, there is just Jerusalem. And Arab has nothing to do with the equation in Jerusalem. This is not a racial issue. It is a religious issue. And so if you want to talk about it intelligently, you have to say Muslim. And then it says, in the shadow of the old city, which was founded by guess whom? The smartest man who ever lived. By the individual God loves more than anyone else. By the person Yahweh inspired to write most of the Psalms. Daud, whom we know as David. And it says where tourists seldom venture. You know why tourists seldom venture into the old city? It's because Muslims are there. And they're violent. And they're ruthless, and they're enraged, and they're uncivilized, and they're dangerous. They're prone to kidnap, enslavement, rape, thievery, you name it, and of course murder. Their prophet was all of those things, a terrorist, a pedophile, a rapist, a mass murderer. That's why very few tourists go there. This Reuters journalist doesn't seem to recognize that. It says that it has been ablaze recently with daily clashes between Israeli police and Palestinians throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails. You know, why not talk about this the way that it is? This makes it sound like, oh, it's tit for tat. Those crazy Israeli police, they're instigating violence. If it wasn't for those Israeli police, this would be a lovely, peaceful place, kind of like Syria. There's no Israeli police in Syria, so it would be like Syria. Maybe it would be like Iraq in the midst of a civil war. Oh, perhaps it would be like Yemen, or maybe Somalia. There's no Israeli police in those places. They're just living hellholes. The police are responding to Muslims, not only throwing rocks, but improvised explosive devices and Molotov cocktails, which are gasoline bombs designed to burn the victim to death. Stop throwing Molotov cocktails. Stop throwing improvised explosive devices. Stop rioting. Start working. Start doing something constructive, and you won't encounter the Israeli police. This, stupidly, and Reuters is stupid, says the roots of the unrest are many, from the killing in July of a Palestinian teenager by Jewish extremists, apparently in revenge for killing three Israeli teenagers by Palestinians. What rubbish. First of all, there is no such thing as a Palestinian. If you can't use correct terms, then you ought not be writing, because the medium of journalism is writing. You ought to know what terms are true and what terms are not. And this concept of a Palestinian is completely and totally bogus. Now, moving beyond that, the Palestinian, as they would call him, Muslim teenager, was not killed by Jewish extremists. There's no such thing as a Jewish extremist. The individual that killed the Muslim boy was clinically insane. It's been known that he's been clinically insane for a very long time. They found him. He's in prison. He will be tried. He will be convicted. But ultimately, he is insane. He suffers from psychiatric disorders. So his motivation isn't even relevant. His political extremism, should you even buy into it, isn't relevant. What's relevant is he's mentally disturbed. He didn't kill in revenge. He killed because being mentally handicapped, he couldn't exercise judgment. Now, there weren't three Israeli teenagers that were murdered by Muslims. There were four. Three boys and one girl. And it was deliberate murder. And it was state-sponsored, religiously sponsored murder. And it was celebrated murder. It's night and day. And if you can't put things in context, you ought not be writing. In the case of the murdered Jewish children, the three boys and one girl, the Palestinian Authority, Fatah, the PLO, and Hamas, the political and religious leadership over the Muslims living in Israel, celebrated it. Talked about the murderers as heroes. Encouraged them to do it, and then talked about their status with their God for having done so. And in the case of Israel, the president called the victim's father and said, "I'm sorry." He says, "I'll find out who did this. They'll be tried. They'll be convicted. They'll be punished." It's night and day. Black and white. Good versus evil. Then this says the next issue is the increased settlement building in East Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It has been for thousands of years. It has never been anything other than the capital of Israel. It is the promised land. Yahweh, who happens to be God, gave it to the Jews. They built it. It is theirs. And this idea that you would be enraged because somebody is building homes indicates that you're very sick. You have to be unbalanced mentally, incapable of exercising good judgment. Be immune to morality. When you are enraged by someone building homes, particularly when they're building homes on land that they own, that they have purchased, and that they're replacing squalor. This says that the teenage Palestinians are enraged by the war in Gaza. To hell, they are. They started the war in Gaza. They sent rockets into Israel in wholesale contradiction to their promises that they would not do so. They used slave labor, murdering the laborers who built tunnels for the express purpose of infiltrating Israel and killing innocents. How can you be enraged by a war that you started? and the push by ultra-nationalist Jews to be allowed to pray at one of Islam's holiest site. Good God, you're repulsive. It's amazing that an editor, okay, let's just say this journalist is a Muslim. Let's say this journalist is a total and complete nincompoop. There's got to be someone who works at Reuters who's got a brain. Maybe not. This idea that you're an ultra-national because you want to pray. No. If you want to pray, you're religious. And it is the Temple Mount. Now, while I am wholly opposed to religion and, truthfully, wholly opposed to nationalism, the fact is that the Temple Mount is only infected by Muslims because their wannabe God wants to be seen as greater than Yahweh. And Yahweh, not once but twice, had his home, his temple, built on the Temple Mount. It is called the Temple Mount not because there are two Muslim shrines, a shrine and a mosque there. It's called the Temple Mount because Yahweh had Dod bring in the materials and Solomon build the first temple there. And when it was destroyed, it was rebuilt after the chosen people returned from a time of slavery in Babylon. And it is only because the Romans and the Muslims despised Yahweh and his chosen people, even his land, that these Muslims want their religious sites here. Places irrelevant to them. It's not even mentioned in the Quran. There is a reference to an unnamed place in the Quran where Muhammad claims to have ridden a wild winged ass, one on top of the other, to a non-existent temple, thereby disqualifying himself as a credible spokesperson for God. But that's it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're shattering the myths being promoted by Reuters here. And it talks about ultra-nationalist Jews. As opposed to, why not just talk about them as religious Jews? Now, ultra-nationalist. You know, you've got a mythical people in the Palestinians that are waging war over their right to call a country after the mythical name they've chosen for themselves. And they're not presented as ultra, extremist, or nationalistic. And yet Jews living in Israel, living actually in Judea as part of Israel, are called ultra-nationalists when they wish to go and stand and pray on the very place where their temple stood 3,000 years ago. And yet you want to define them as ultra-nationalists. You're just a piece of garbage when you do that. And they now say they want to be allowed to pray at one of Islam's holiest sites. Bull! I don't want to pray there because it's an Islam site. It's not an Islamic site. It's the Temple Mount, Yahweh's temple. There's nothing there in association with Allah. Now, beyond that, it's not an Islamic holy site. Mecca is the Islamic holy site. Medina is Islam's holy site. The Temple Mount in Israel is a gloating site. Not a holy site, it's a gloating site. It exists because Allah was modeled after Satan, and Satan wants to be considered greater than Yahweh. That's what Allahu Akbar means. And the ultimate Allahu Akbar is building two shrines to Satan under the guise of Allah, right on top of Yahweh's Temple Mount. It is a gloating site. It's not a holy site. The seething anger was brought to the fore again on Wednesday when a Palestinian man rammed his vehicle, he was a Muslim man, at the encouragement of Fatah, his vehicle into pedestrians and Israeli border police on a road straddling east and west Jerusalem, killing one person and wounding a dozen. The attacker was shot dead by police. You know, Muslims act badly. Islam destroys their ability to be civilized. The result is the greatest period of unrest the city has experienced since the second Palestinian uprising, or Intifada, which began in 2000, a five-year period of conflict that left 3,000, this says Palestinians, read Muslim rioters, and 1,000 is innocent Israelis dead. The Intifada was called by Yasser Arafat. The purpose of the Intifada uprising was to resolve the problem that Islam was having with Israel. And this was the second of the two that was called. You see, Israel did not respond in a way that was conducive to Islam's braggadocious nature. When they came to the land, they encouraged Muslims to stay, gave Muslims full right of citizenship. They treated Muslims nicely, where every Islamic country surrounding Israel treated Jews horribly. They did not treat the Muslims as the Jews were treated in the surrounding countries. They allowed full voting rights. They allowed full educational rights. They allowed full health care rights. They allowed full access to the economy. And as a result, the Muslims living in Israel very quickly became the best educated, most prosperous, freest, healthiest Muslims in the world. And that made Islam look really bad because all of the countries around Israel, even those with oozing oil, were living hellholes. And they could not treat a minority religious group with anything but disgust and disdain. And here, Muslims as a minority now were treated better than Islamic countries treated their own. So what to do? It was embarrassing for Islam. Embarrassing for Allah. Allah was not Akbar. He was inferior. Islam was inferior. The Jews were superior, even on behalf of Muslims. So the Muslims do what they did best and have always done best. They became terrorists. We'll be back. This jaundiced piece from Reuters continues. While the upheaval has largely been confined to a half dozen neighborhoods in the hills and valleys to the south and east of the old city, it uses the term Palestinians, of which there have never been any Palestinians. There have been Philistines, but they all were eradicated by the Assyrians 2,500 years ago. Say anger in their community is now exceeding that of 14 years ago, and there are clear signs of the unrest spreading. What are they angry at? Really, what are they angry at? Their own stupidity? Their religion, which creates no hope? Their religion, which inspires anger? What are they angry at? Are they conspiracy theorists and think that the Jews are somehow interfering in their lives and are holding them down and oppressing them, in which case they would be stupid? Again, before they became terrorists, the Muslims living in Israel were the freest, best educated, healthiest, and most economically prosperous Muslims in the world. And now, while they still have rights to citizenship, They're nothing other than enraged rioters. If they want to be angry, their unrest should be at their religion, at their political leaders, at themselves. Last week, an Israeli-American activist who has led a campaign for Jews to be allowed to pray at the city's holiest site known to Muslims as the Noble Sanctuary and Jews as the Temple Mount. Amazing that they would print the Muslim view first, and then the Jews, and not say that it's known to Muslims for 1,300 years as the Noble Sanctuary and to Jews for 3,000 years as the Temple Mount, and only known to Muslims as the Noble Sanctuary because Muhammad hallucinated visiting there. His child wife at the time, Aisha, who was 9 years old, while Muhammad was 53, said, yeah, I was in bed with me during that night. He never moved. The Quran's claim that he flew there on the winged ass is asinine. The story does nothing but embarrass Muhammad and Allah and Islam. It proves that the Quran is not true. It proves that Muhammad can't be trusted. And yet not thinking, pushing all of the relevance of that aside, Muslims choose to side with their wannabe God and claim the site for themselves. It is sheer arrogance and nothing else. Anyway, the Israeli-American activist was shot and wounded as he left a conference in the predominantly Jewish western side of Jerusalem. Why was he shot and wounded? Because Muslims are murderers, that's why. And why are Muslims murderers? Because Muhammad was a murderer. That's why. The suspect in the attack is a Muslim. His name is Muataz Hijazi. He was shot dead by Israeli police within hours following exchange of gunfire in Abu Thor, a Muslim district, just a few hundred yards from where the activist Yehuda Glick had spoken. Do you know why the Palestinian was killed as opposed to a Muslim murderer? Was killed as opposed to taken for and indicted, tried. Because when the Israeli police went to apprehend him, he shot at them. A week before, a Muslim from Silwan, a district abutting the old city, where Jewish settlers have been growing in numbers, rammed his car into a crowd waiting at a light rail stop, killing a three-month-old Israeli-American child and a woman from Ecuador. This pathetic, disgusting, repulsive individual writing this article from Reuters wants you to feel sympathy for the murderer of the three-month-old child and woman from Ecuador. She wants you to think that because there are increasing numbers of settlers, of homeowners, in a community, that this man was justified in his ruthless behavior. That's what this author, this writer, working for Reuters, wants you to believe. That the increase in the number of people living in a community is justification for driving a car into the midst of people waiting in front of a light rail station and murdering an infant, and a woman. The person who is writing this article has been educated in a politically correct establishment and has absolutely no capacity whatsoever to exercise good judgment. They are immoral. The streets of Abu Dhabi, which locals call Al-Thuri, were quickly aflame over Hajjazi's killing. Can you imagine that? This man, in cold blood, shoots to kill a Jew who was doing nothing more than using words, going to a meeting where there'll be a presentation of ideas, and he takes a gun and shoots to kill him. And then when police come to arrest him, he shoots at them and is killed in the process. And the Muslims, rather than taking responsibility for their hideous behavior, are enraged. You can't fix this. This is a deadly disease. It can't be resolved. It can't be fixed. It can't be improved. There is nothing you can give someone that is that sick, that depraved, that will cause them to act appropriately. If you reward such inhuman behavior, all you're going to get is more of it. Hi, Glenn. I'm sorry for having you on hold so long. I got focused on this. I'm just so disgusted by the inability of people to write intelligently, fairly, morally.
Yeah, I've often wondered, when these incidents occur, I often wonder why Israel allowed the control of the Temple Mount to remain under the authority of the Islamic Vox Council, which, mm-hmm. is Jordanian-based. And even after the Six-Day War, they still... Just a minute, I'm a little back on
that. I'll tell you how that happened.
Even after the Six-Day War, they allowed that to continue.
Let me tell you how that happened. The Moshe Dayan was the general
famous for the eye patch.
Right, yeah, the guy with the eye patch, exactly. And he was the most celebrated general at that phase of the war, as the Israelis were pushing the Muslim aggressors out of Israel. He was an atheist. And so he did not want his own people to re-identify with the Temple Mount. Of course, it was one of the greatest mistakes of all time, and rather than then saying, listen, I don't want my own people to claim it because I'm an atheist. He should have said, first of all, he should have had his own people claim it. It's their temple,
right?
And the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque should have been both razed, bulldozed to the ground. Now. What he could have done, had he wished to, is say, I'll tell you what, we're going to make this a international site for the time being. We're going to establish rules that say that anybody can go up there, and if anybody tries to prevent somebody from going up there, then there'll be very serious consequences. It's a place where people from around the world should be able to freely visit. And, of course,
that's precisely what the Antichrist is going to do, I think, with the treaty.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So the right choice was to cleanse it of all things Islam. The worst choice was to do what he did, which was to say, I'm going to give authority over it to the Muslims. And in between was let's let anybody who wishes to visit here visit. But it was Moshe Dayan that did this, and it was a terrible and tragic mistake.
Yeah, and Ben Gurion, and then later Meir, had to give assent to it, and especially after the Six-Day War, they could have taken it by force at that time.
You see, though, what happened, though, in the Six-Day War is that the United States intervened. And the United States says, whoa, you know, we had no idea that you're going to be this successful. And so, you know, we had our experiment here, but, you know, you can't conquer Damascus. You get out of Syria. You can't conquer Jordan. You get out. You can't continue to occupy the Sinai. You're going to have to give it back. You better not conquer Cairo. They would have owned it all. If the United States had not intervened and said, you know, we are going to work against you as opposed to being neutral in this unless you withdraw, then I think they would have had an entirely different approach. But the United States was a belligerent in this.
Yeah, the special relationship between the U.S. and Israel is dubious in both directions.
Yeah, you know, it strikes me as that the United States is Israel's single most ruthless foe. And we'll talk more about that when the program continues after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Having a conversation with Glenn about the unrest that is being perpetrated by Muslims in Israel at large, but of course mostly in Jerusalem. I continue to be saddened. I'm not surprised anymore, but I am saddened by the wholesale inability of educated individuals to ascertain what is actually transpiring in the Muslim world. There just doesn't seem to be any ability to comprehend the source of their rage. And that source of rage cannot be satiated with capitulation. If you talk about a two-state, and they'll put it in two-state solution, naming one of the states after a mythical people, rewarding them for committing grotesque acts of terrorism and murder, and you think somehow that's going to create peace, and you're unwilling to look at what happened when the United States compelled Israel to give Gaza to these same Muslims? What did they do when they were given independence over their territory? They weaponized it. They militarized it. They made it ever more of a hellhole without hope. And so you've got people who have no hope, no education, no economic opportunity, and all they can look forward to is dying the martyr's death, and now they're weaponized. So what would happen if, in addition to the mistake that the United States compelled Israel into regarding Gaza, is then perpetrated on Israel regarding the West Bank, Judea and Samaria? Well, Yahweh tells us, and it isn't pretty.
Yeah, right, it's not. I'm guessing that after the Magog War, that's when they'll have this treaty, and they'll divide the Temple Mount. They'll turn the Temple Mount into an international religious Disney World, you know, where you'll have everybody up in different areas. And I think they'll build a tabernacle on the Dome of the Tablets site myself. And
yeah,
so
you know what's kind of
all
interesting?
Religions operating up there.
You know what's kind of interesting is that in Christian eschatology, there's this notion that there is a new temple reestablished, and that there are sacrifices made in that new temple. Now, they don't ever equate those sacrifices to Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavua, ending in Yom Kippur. Yeah, they don't. They never make that connection. But they do say, okay, there's a temple going to be there, and there's going to be sacrifices there. You know, as I analyze the oldest texts of Daniel, I don't get that. I don't draw that same conclusion. I see the Torahless one, known to Christians as the Antichrist, reemphasizing the religious holidays that have become dominant in world culture. I mean, he's going to emphasize Islamic and Christian holidays, and he is going to establish his religion there, which I think will be a blend of secularism and socialism and Islam and Christianity. And I do think he will make Jerusalem, his capital for a very short period of time. But I really don't think there has to be any construction there for all of that to transpire.
Well, I think a lot of people have the notion that he'll sign this covenant and breach this treaty and proclaim himself God, much as a Roman ruler would,
Exactly like Hadrian did. You know, if you want to want to understand the Torahless one, known to Christians as the Antichrist, study Hadrian. You know, Hadrian called all the Jews back to Israel and said, you know, all is forgotten. We'll rebuild your city. I know that in 70 CE, we were pretty ruthless and we destroyed the temple. And, you know, we were bad. But you come on back to Jerusalem and we'll all live here in harmony. We'll give you your rights back and we'll rebuild the Jerusalem into a city the world can be proud of. And Jews came back. And what did Hadrian do? He says, oh, I forgot to tell you a couple of aspects of my plan. I'm going to name it after me, and the temple we're going to build on the top of it is going to be to worship me as God. How do you like them apples? And oh, by the way, I'm going to annihilate you. Welcome home.
Yeah.